Session number 11268, rule 7.
Mr. Joseph Clements, rule 7. We were talking about you were in when you were in Haslar Hospital around about June, July 1916.
Yeah, up to August, really. Went in the June and discharged in the August. I discharged to Fulton Barracks, Gosport, which was the headquarters of the Marines then.
What state were your legs and your sort of breakages in? What state were you in when you were discharged?
Well, I could just about walk fairly well without crutches or sticks or anything like that. I'd been on them up in Haslar, first of all. Gradually walked out of them. Anyway, they put me on light duties there, and that was just a lot of jobs. I was excused. Well, not fit for further active service, actually, they put it. And I was on the old light duties.
They had an interview, didn't you, about the fact that you were, according to them, you were wounded. Could you just...
Yes, I was called up in front of the CO one day, and he said that he had to find out from me all about, as much as he could, remember about the accident, or at least my disability, or whatever you like to call it. And I told him, no, I'm going too fast. I stood there, and I couldn't answer a word. I couldn't open my mouth. And if he hadn't been the kind of man he was, I'd have still been standing there.
Why were you so tongue-tied? Can you just explain?
And, so I'm just saying, that's the beginning of that shell shock. Shell shock and that. He said to me, all right, son, it's just the words you used. All right, son, he says, take your time. Tell me when you're ready. Don't worry about me. And I gradually settled down a bit and began to speak. But I had to, I found afterwards, I had to speak with a soft beginning. I couldn't speak, start speaking with a D or a P or something like that. It had to be S, you know, or things like that, a soft beginning. Or I'd work round a word to start off on like that. So, I told him then, he said the idea was that it wasn't an actual wound that I'd received, and they had to make sure that it wasn't my fault, and I was sober and all the rest of the time it happened. And that was that, you see. At any rate, I got granted what they call a hurt certificate, which entitled me to be classified as genuine. It wasn't my own fault. Well, then I carried on with my light duties there.
Did you get an actual medical examination to class you as unfit for duties?
No, I think they went on the reports from Haslar that came with me. I don't remember an actual examination in Fulton Barracks. So I carried on there doing a lot of jobs. And then I began to feel this business coming on more so than usual, this shell shock, I thought it was.
Were there any other symptoms besides, inability to speak properly?
That was the main one. But I was going to say pretty well it was the only one, at least the only one I noticed. Because there was another way. I was walking down with Palomine down to what they called the Hard at Gosport, where the ferries started from. We were going down to a photographer's shop, and we had to cross a road to go down to this side road, and looking back to my left, coming towards me with a tram. The old trams were still going then, and it was about 150 yards away, just come round the bend there. And I stood in the middle of that track and I couldn't move. Just couldn't move. And my mate had got across the other side, looked back and saw I was stuck there, and he came back and gave me a pull and started me off again. So I got across. And then we, of course, went to the photographers, photographs taken, what's your name? He had to go inside and bring him in to tell the person my name. And that's how it affected me. And it got very, pretty bad at times. I used to be in the barrack room, and I may want some boot polish, I may want some toothpaste, I may want this, that, and the other from the canteen. And I'd kind of creep out of the door to go down. But always somebody said, "Oh, you're going down the canteen?" And I'd say, "Yes." "Oh, bring me back so and so." And I hated them then, because I had to. I knew very well I'd get stuck on it, you see. So, anyway.
Did you get any treatment for it at all at that
stage? No. The elderly, pensioner, I should say, who was serving behind the bar in the canteen, and he said, he got used to me, and he used to say, "Oh, hello, son, what do you want this morning?" And when he started me off like that, then I would say what I wanted. But to start off from dead scratch, I couldn't. But he gave me that start, and I'm always kind of thankful for him, because that was a big start for me. Well, that went on, and I think it gradually eased off away from there. I suppose being back in, away from the shell fire. Oh, one of the doctors did tell me that it was a result of being under continuous shell fire for so long, and that was Gallipoli. We were always under shell fire. That, and the shock of the fall out of this building that brought all that on. And I did gradually work it, although for a long, long while afterwards, I was always hesitant about starting a sentence. I had to think carefully.
Were your friends, were the troop, the sailors you were with, reasonably sympathetic in the barracks?
I don't know they were sympathetic. They all had their own troubles, I think. Three parts of them in the barrack room were casualties of some sort from the various, either the land service or the boats.
So you didn't stand out that much amongst them?
No.
And how long were you at Fortnum Barracks?
Well, I was just trying to think the other day. I went into Fortnum Barracks in August 1916, I think it was, and then I had a month's leave, sick leave, went back, done another couple of odd jobs, and then, now I can't remember whether it was before or after Christmas, we got sent round. I got picked out as one, I don't know why, at about 25 of us, as a party, working party, going down to Harwich. An ammunition guard we were doing, I suppose, down there.
What did that entail? What did it?
Well, that entailed there was an ammunition dump down there, and there were four pairs of lighters were tied up the river there, just outside of not Harwich. What's the other big where the boats go from? Anyway, they were up the river. Towards Manning Treeway, four pairs of lighters, and they were full of ammunition. And it was our job then as guard. One of us used to go on a pair of lighters, four of us at a time, you see. And we'd done the naval watch on them, four on and eight off, night and day. Night time, there was a trot boat, as it was called, used to come up and anchor off the lighters and relieve the sentries during the night time. After doing, we'd done that 4 hours. If I went on at 8 o'clock, I'd be off at 12. Then somebody else come on, things like that. Well, that went on for a while.
Was there ever any incident,
No. It was very. The biggest incident was one of our chaps, an older chap, old serving man. He got in touch with somebody on the boat, HMS Dido we were on, which was called the mothership of the destroyers in that area. He got to know the somebody there, and he got two or three balls of twine, and he made up some fishnets. See? And we used to take them up with us, and then he saw the blacksmith on there, and he made us two or three iron rings, fitted the nets to these to make a cone-shaped net. A double string across the top, and we used to catch old crabs or things like that, kill them off, put them in between these there, drop them over the side, and we very often got some good, nice flounder or dabs and eels. They were out down there. And get more crabs to make more bait. And we used to pass our time on that. And also take some of those dabs and that down to the ship to give the chap so many for some more twine. That's all a swizzle. But that was when they used to call it the beef run, because the destroyers used to go out towards Holland way to collect in food stuff and bring it in. And very often they got engaged in some hit and run, firing a few shells here and there. Well, when they came back to Harwich, Parkston was the name of the place I'd been, Parkston Quay. There were so many short of their complement of shells, they used to call on us, and we had to supply them, you see.
Would you actually help load them?
Not at that particular time.
You were just the guard?
We were there taking in messages that they wanted so many, a destroyer wanted so many rounds of 4.7, whatever they were. And we'd pass the message on, and then there was a working party who'd done all that. Well, after...
Where were you billeted while you were doing this?
Pardon?
Where were you billeted?
Boat, on HMS Dido, cruiser. After a while, at a place called Rabness, about two stations up from Parkston, in the woods, they built some sheds, ammunition sheds, and they transferred all the ammunition from those lighters up to these sheds. And we went with them. We had our living accommodation up there. And the railway made a special line off from the main one into our place so they could run a train in and load it up with load it up with whatever was required. And so we finished up there. I got a photograph somewhere of one of the places.
And you were there from late 17 to armistice? Huh? You were there from late in 1917, you told me earlier, till
that would be 18, I should think, then.
Yeah.
Yes, it was, because I remember one of the chaps, he was on the opposite watch to me. He was a naval lad, and he should have been on that afternoon. And we heard peace had been declared. He went across to the village, had several pints, and came back. And the sergeant in charge said to him in the evening, "Well, look, so-and-so, I forget his name now, you didn't get a chance for a drink dinner time." He said, when peace was declared, he said, "You better go off now." I never had one. He'd already been over there. So,
how did you feel when armistice was declared yourself?
Well, it's a job to say. It's a long while ago now. Well, that's the finish of it, or, you know, rather casual, I think.
So what happened next? Because you were a regular, weren't you?
Yes. Well, what happened next was peace was declared, or at least armistice was signed, and somewhere in 1919, I'm pretty sure of that date, but what part of it, I don't know. I think it was 121 or 123... German submarines were brought into Harwich Harbour as the price of war, that was. They had to surrender them. And then each of the nations who were allies of ours came and took so many. Like with France, we say they took half a dozen. Portugal, so many. Even the Japanese and the Italians who were against us in the next war, they came and took so many. And the prize was, I think it was 120, 120, something like that.
And how did you see that? Were you on guard or something?
No, we were on off duty on the old Dido, the cruiser ship.
You were back on that then?
Hmm?
You were back on the Dido?
No, we were down there. They used to have a little office down near it, and there's a PO, a naval PO. He was in charge of it, and I was with him with more of a, I suppose, a runner or something like that, you know, took most of the messages and distributed them, things like that. And we saw all this stuff coming in, and I won't see the thing you won't see again, I think. I did have a photograph of them, I think. I don't think I've lost it, though. Anyway, that was... the other big thing in the naval man's life there and up there. We were up in the woods at Radnes. We used to get our ration of rum, let's say, and tobacco. Well, we got word coming that as we weren't on the boat, we weren't entitled to it. And the customs were coming up to have a hunt round. Well, I had a bottle of rum. I'd saved up because I didn't used to drink, you see. Now I used to put my tot of rum and I bought it into a kind of a big whiskey bottle. And this was full, so a chap said to me, what are you going to do with that when the customs come? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to bury it out in the woods. So I did. I got buried it well down under near a bush. I marked it out but they never did come, the customs. But anyway, I left it there. And the chap said to me one day, hey, what about that bottle of rum you had? Oh, I said, it's still out there. Oh, why don't you drink it? I said, I don't like it. I said, I'll tell you what you can do. I said, if you can find it, you can have it. Yeah. Oh, he said, I'm having a look at that. He went with a spade out in the wood. And he started digging right near where it was. I was with him. I didn't say anything. And he dug so then he packed up and he said, I won't never find that. He didn't. Well, later on I got leave to go home. And I took a chance, picked up this bottle of rum, put it on me, went into Parkston Station when the customs were there. We got on the boat, down the train rather, to Liverpool Street to come home. And sometimes customs got on the train with you, you see. But at any rate, I got through quite home, took it home to my mother. My elder brother, he'd been home on a couple of times from France. He was in the service as well. I said, I gave it to my mother. And later I said to her, what happened to that... bottle of rum, quite a time later on, 6-7 months perhaps. Oh, he says, Tim had, that's my brother, he had a couple of tots of it when he was home. She said, I made bay rum with it and rubbed it in me hair. That's where my naval ration of rum went.
So after the armistice, you were still based in the huts at Radnes?
Yes.
The ammunition dump carried on.
Yes, yes.
There can't have been much to do, was there?
It was coming, it was stacking it. We stacked all there, submarine heads and all the rest of it, torpedo heads rather, winching them in and stacking them. There was quite a bit to do there, but I suppose they still kept all the destroyers up to date with all their... with their complement of shells. But then it gradually died down and then we heard that we were going back to barracks. So back to barracks we went. They put me... I was went through a medical board there and they said I was A1 then. So they classed me A1. And I got told off for... the ship was... been manned, the HMS Renown, I think it was, the Prince of Wales went on to the Australia on a goodwill mission after the war. And I was told off for this. I thought, well, that's all right. But just before they were due to embark, said, we're long, I'm not going. The reason was I hadn't been through a course of gun drills. I had to go through this course of gun drills to be an efficient unit. Well, of course, the board intervened in that, like you see, because even the light infantry, we were all went through a course of gun drills up to a 6-inch gun, although he was only light infantry. The Royal Marine Artillery, they took over the bigger guns, you see. So there was that, well, it was during this period when I was going to start, I don't really think I started on the gun drills this session, and I was put on guard one day, and the adjutant came round inspecting the guard, as usual, and it was all back to Civvy Street stuff again. He came along to me, he said, port your arms correctly. You know, he put you, I don't know if you understand, there, port your arms correctly. Well, as far as I knew, I was. I hadn't had any revising drill, not since 1914. So I didn't know what was wrong. I just cantered the muzzle up a bit. He said, take that man's name, Sergeant. Now his extra drill. He doesn't know his drill. So I thought, well, that's not very fair. I'm not going to do that lot. Anyway, I had to fall in the next day after I come off guard, underneath all, full pack and all the rest of it, marching up and down. I went so many times and I dropped out. The NCO said, boy, I said, well, it cost me injury to me leg and me wrist won't allow me to carry on any further. Or I said, see the MO tonight. It was hurting, but of course you try and carry a rifle at the slope with that hand like that. It's got to be round there, you know. And I can't get round there. And you're not there for 2 minutes there, you're there watching up and down. And it was hurting, and the knee began to hurt, full weight of pack and everything else. So I saw the surgeon at night, and he examined me. And he said, I've a good mind to put you in for malingering. I said, I'm sorry, sir, I'm not malingering. And he said, nothing wrong with it now. I said, I've been resting on my bed, I said, since whatever time it was, 3 o'clock became off this business. 3 or 4 hours I've been laying on the bed. And he said, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Well, what went on from that, I don't know. Next thing I knew was that I was sent before a board of surgeons up at Hasler Hospital, and they ruled whether I was fit or not, and they decided I wasn't fit to carry on in the, you know, that I'd be discharged. So I got discharged.
How did you feel about that?
Pleased and sorry. It's a funny thing to say, but you wiped that out. Sorry. Well, I was pleased in a way. I thought, because I knew very well I couldn't do any further in the services, because I wouldn't be able to pass the various exams physically that NCOs are always put through. So I knew I wouldn't be entitled to that, and I was sorry in a way because I liked the service. At any rate, it came through that I was to be discharged on, as I say, I think it was sometime early in May 1920. And so,
did you get any pension or disability?
Yes. We love this. They gave me a pension of 8 shillings a week for the 12-month, and then end of that first 12-month, I had to go up again for a review. The doctors and the surgeons, they examined me again, and they said that we decided that we'll lower your pension from 8 shillings to 7 and 6. Okay. That was for another year. Then the next time I went up again, they said we've decided to give you 7 and 6 a week for 156 weeks, which is 3 years. They said, then it's finished, and you get a gratuity of £50. And if you want to make an appeal against it, you have to make it within the first 12 months. Well, by that time, I'd got settled at home. I was in the St. Lawrence's Hospital working in there. And I'd made up my mind I was going to get into their cricket and football team because they had a good team. I'm not boasting there, but it were a good team. And that's what I was doing. I thought to myself, when I got that message, if I appeal against it, they might find out, or again, make inquiries, find out I'm playing football and cricket, and knock off everything, you see. So I let it go. And at the end of that third year, it automatically died off.
Now, how long did it take? You went to work for St. Lawrence's Hospital in Caterham.
Yeah.
And how long did you have trouble getting a job in
no.
May 1920?
No.
So you were able
to... I lived next door to a chap in the next road to me there who worked there. He was an old hand there, one of the charge hands. And I'd been looking around doing odd jobs round about. And he said, I'd been trying out everywhere. And he said to me, hey, Joe, he said, why don't you try in the hospital? He said, that we're getting some, opening up two wards with patients coming from Tooting Beck. I said, oh, yes, all right. So I went in. We say, I'm not sure what the day, but we say it's Friday, you see. I went in there to be interviewed, saw the head nurse, interviewed me, then I had to see the doctor. And they were taking then, they were asked, I think, by the authorities to take so many disabled, people who were disabled then. I was still getting that pension then, you see. And... taking the percentage of disabled men. So I went in there and... I forgot where I got to now.
You were just about getting... about when you got your job?
Oh, yes, and I went in there and he said, you're all right, yes, we're pleased to have you. When can you start?
As what?
An assistant nurse, as a probationer nurse. Oh, I said, I can start tomorrow. Oh, he said, I'm just as quick as that. He said, make it Monday. He says, come at 8 o'clock Monday morning. And that's when I started. And it was November 1920 when I started there.
And how long were you eventually to stay at St. Lawrence?
At St. Lawrence's, I stayed for 37 years. as a matter of fact, I needn't have come out then. And I began to feel... it was getting like hard work. And I think when it got like that, I think you've had enough. But they asked me if I'd go back part-time. So I went back and I was there another 18 years. So I was on the books of St. Lawrence's for 55 years, really.